Well, I do have existential worries. I think everybody else am concerned about death. Death is in some ways unacceptable. I mean, it's just an astonishing fact of our being here that we die. But I think worse than that is that if we live long enough, we lose everyone we love in this world. I mean, do people die and disappear, and we are left with this stark mystery? There's just the sheer not knowing of what happened to them. And into this void, religion comes rushing with a very consoling story saying, nothing happened to them, they're in a better place, and you're going to meet up with them after you die. You're going to get everything you want after you die, death is an illusion. There's no question that, if you could believe it, that would pay emotional dividends. I mean, there's no other story you can tell somebody who's just lost her daughter to cancer, say, to make her feel good. It is consoling to believe that the daughter was just taken up with Jesus and everyone's going to be reunited in a few short years. There's no replacement for that. There doesn't need to be a replacement for that. I think we have to just witness the cost of that. I mean, there are many obvious costs of that way of thinking. One is we just don't teach people how to grieve. I mean, religion is the kind of the antithesis of teaching your children how to grieve. You tell your child that grandma's in heaven, and there's nothing to be sad about. That's religion. It would be better to equip your child for the reality of this life, which is, death is a fact, and we don't know what happens after death. And I'm not pretending to know that you get a dial tone after death. I don't know what happens after the physical brain dies. I don't know what the relationship between consciousness and the physical world is. I don't think anyone does know. Now, I think there are many reasons to be doubtful of naive conceptions about the soul and about this idea that you could just migrate to a better place after death. But I simply don't know about I don't know what I believe about death. And I don't think it's necessary to know in order to live as sanely and ethically and happily as possible. I don't think you don't get anything worth getting by pretending to know things.
He said, baby, what's the big deal? Feel what you wanna feel. Say what you wanna say. You're gonna die one day. For example, I could kiss you just because I want to. What's the difference if you turn away? I'm gonna die one day. Why do you waste your time thinking about your reputation? Trying to meet an expectation. Wondering what they're gonna say. When everyone you ever know.
Hey everyone, this is Carlos Morales, and this is the Libertarian Atheist Podcast, myself and Calvin, and today we are joined by MK yet again. How are you doing today, MK?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Pretty good.
Wonderful.
So we decided to go into a really lighthearted topic as per usual, because that's what we do on Libertarian Atheist Podcast. But in all honesty, we don't want to normally cover just the normal ramblings you hear on libertarian radio shows, which go on and on about the roads and the Federal Reserve and fucking with cops and Robin Hooding and cop killings and doom porn and Ron Paul.
Chemtrails.
Yeah, chemtrails. Instead, we wanted to create a community which discussed the personal, the philosophical, and not just the non-aggression principle and the questions that are often ignored. Which brings us to today's topic, which is actually the topic of death. Not necessarily war, not the state's killing of people, but simply the idea of death. It's a topic that is often brought up by atheists and agnostics and all the other categories of non-believers, but not necessarily within conversations with those people, but rather when believers have spoken to me regarding what's going to happen when I die. So obviously I have no idea, but I find some of the religion's obsession with death and the authority in which they claim to know the truth about the afterlife fascinating, because Christianity is a religion which is based solely around death, which is the murder and the rising of the Lord. He died for our sins, and then the death porn in churches is almost surreal. You have Jesus bloodied on a cross as their symbol, and there are Christians who actually use that execution device as a piece of jewelry. So I think an interesting thing to kind of go on in regard to this is kind of, what are your thoughts on why Christianity has such an obsession with death?
Well, I was going to say that Christianity has this obsession with death in large part, I think, because all people have some obsession with death, especially when they get to a certain age and see the jaws of oblivion coming for them, as it were. If you have no particular purpose for living, I think even more so, it makes the thought of death, the thought of ending it all, even more terrifying.
Yeah, I can totally.
Yeah.
Go ahead, MK.
I think people have a natural fear of death because they have that fear of the unknown. And if you can say that you know for certain what will happen after you die, it can bring people a lot of comfort and, you know, make them feel safe, but it can also, you know, make them pretty easy to control. And I think, you know, the history of that particular religion has, you know, it's pretty awful, and there's a lot of controlling factors of it. And I think if you can scare someone to death about death, then that control factor goes up even more. And it's also a very lucrative cult as well. So
yeah, and again, you know, to kind of the point of regards to the obsession with death within Christianity, the entire thing is built off of the sacrifice of human beings. And it's interesting because you get to be rekindled with that every single time you ever go to Mass, at least especially in Catholic churches, where they bring up the execution of Christ and how he sacrificed for our sins. And then you have this weird cannibalistic fetish known as transubstantiation, which is people believe that once a week you take bread and you take wine and you turn it to body and blood of Jesus Christ and you eat it, in order to be reminded of the great sacrifice of our Lord. So Christianity, the entire idea of it is one that is based solely on the idea of sacrifice and death.
In fairness, only the Catholics think that that is literal. Although I don't know which is weirder, to take it literally or to take it metaphorically. I mean, metaphor for what?
Yeah, it'd be really... well, I don't know. MK, do you know what it's a metaphor for if it's not for... You were able to explain to me the fig tree pretty well, so I don't know about transubstantiation.
Well, so Protestants don't tend to take it as literally. They would say that it's a symbol of the sacrifice that was made. So the body, the breaking of the bread is like the breaking of the body of Christ, and the blood symbolizes the blood that he shed on the cross. And it is a really kind of morbid, almost like metal-like religion, if you think about it. Like, it's kind of metal. And whenever I think
you're about eating dead people, I mean, you're eating God. Like, that's pretty fucking metal.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and Bill Hicks has a pretty funny bit about this, about people wearing crucifixes. And there's this idea that Jesus is going to come back for, you know, his believers. And he's like, you know, imagine Jesus comes back and, you know, his believers are wearing these crucifixes and these necklaces and stuff of him on the cross. That would be like JFK coming back and people wearing wearing rifle necklaces, yeah, or something. Like, it's really a kind of morbid thing. And I think a lot of, people tend to be obsessed with death sometimes because we just don't know what happens. And there's also that thirst for knowledge and really wanting to know. And so it really brings up a lot of, it can really get the gears of the imagination turning. And I think that's where a lot of these kind of ideas about the afterlife come from, is just our imaginations and what we think will happen and maybe what we hope will happen too.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting too, because I believe that Christians are actually more obsessed with death than atheists are. And one of the biggest points, of course, is the idea of the afterlife. And the afterlife was something that really catapulted my own fundamentalism, as it were, when I was younger, because it wasn't some kind of great love for God or some wanting for great virtues. My views were actually completely based off of the threat of eternal damnation. I even had like weird OCD stuff where I'd constantly be thinking about, will this make me go to hell? Will this make me go to hell? So you get obsessed with confession, you get obsessed with all these different ideas. And it's really sad.
I have to say, though, that the heaven that is traditionally offered is not that much better than hell. Would you rather burn forever and be more or less left alone, or would you be forced to sing holy, holy, holy for the rest of all eternity? Because if you read the actual scripture about heaven, you really just stand there and sing praises to God for all time. And I can't think of anything more hellish than that.
No, it's a very North Korea type of war.
It is.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the other thing that I find really interesting about the Christian view of death in the afterlife is, at least in my own experience being brought up Southern Baptist with a lot of family and friends still in that world, it makes you a lot less appreciative of the life you have. The pastor at the last church I went to went to a lot of different revival meetings at various churches, and he found himself – I remember him telling this story one time at a Bible study. He found himself at this church he was preaching for temporarily that had a big horse community, and a bunch of people asked him if he wanted to go horseback riding with him, and his response was something along the lines of, no, I'm going to get all my horse riding in the afterlife, because there's something in – when Jesus comes back after Armageddon, all the believers are going to be riding in on their white horses. And I think in earnest, he planned on getting it all in then. Yeah. You're forfeiting life experiences because you're going to have plenty of time to do it in the afterlife.
I actually experienced this with a group of Christians I knew and was friends with, like a kind of disregard for maybe their health. In this life, they're like, oh, well, you know, if I'm meant to die, I'll die. It's all God's will. And it's a very passive approach to existence. And it really deeply bothered me because, you know, regardless of my beliefs at the time, I have always believed this is, you know, like our one shot at doing something with our lives. And to just abuse your body or, you know, just put off things because, you know, things will be so great in the afterlife just seems like such a waste, and it just seems so sad to me. It was a very, I'm not sure. I mean, the kind of, I guess Ayn Rand calls it like the death premises.
It does seem like the logical conclusion, though, if you actually believe that. That's the thing, is if that premise of the afterlife is true, I can't really fault that thinking, because this would just be a blink of an eye compared to all of that. And that's part of what makes it so insidious. I mean, don't get me wrong here.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, my ex-husband was a fundamentalist Christian, and, you know, there was a constant kind of tension between us, because I very much like to travel, and I very much like to, you know, do as many things as I possibly can fit in life. And it was a constant source of tension because, you know, there was always that kind of debate of like, oh, you need to maybe just kind of chill out now and just, you know, work and just, you know, keep focused on saving money and just like, you know, making money, saving money, doing the whole daily grind thing. And you'll have enough, you know, experiences in the afterlife kind of thing. And like it.
There are no music festivals in the afterlife. No matter which one you go to, there's no pork fest. There's no actual interesting things whatsoever. It's actually just mostly harps, and it is brighter than 10,000 suns, which would make it hotter than hell.
There was a kid in my Sunday school who everyone knew was sleeping around in high school, and I believe one of the other kids kind of confronted him about it at one point, and he said, "That's something I'm not going to be able to do in heaven."
I love that kid's logic. He's probably cool as fuck now.
No, he's a bit of jackass. But,
oh, that's too bad.
You know, but, broken clock is right twice a day.
I guess it is. So there was, we'll get back to the Christianity thing in a bit here, but I want to make sure I don't make this the hate Christianity podcast, because I mean, I end up doing that a lot of the times anyway. So I actually wanted to go into kind of some other views in regards to the afterlife, as it were. And one of them actually comes from sects of Buddhism, and I understand that there's many different versions of Buddhism and everything else. This is just more the generic that I can kind of go over, and actually we can kind of talk about some of these different ideas that you get from Hindu and Eastern-based mysticism. So Buddha accepted the basic Hindu doctrines of reincarnation and karma, as well as the notion that the ultimate goal of the religious life is to escape the cycle of death and rebirth. Buddha asserted that what keeps us bound to the death-rebirth process is desire. Desire in the sense of wanting or craving anything in the world. Hence, the goal of getting off of the Ferris wheel of reincarnation necessarily involves freeing oneself from desire. Nirvana is the Buddhist term for liberation. Nirvana literally means extinction, and it refers to the extinction of all cravings. An extinction that allows one to become liberated. What sticks out to me in this form of superstition and in other forms of asceticism is that there's a complete lack of respect for your life in the here and now, And also the idea that values are simply desires, and desires should be mitigated as much as possible. It is not about actually enjoying your life right now. It is about some kind of meditation that gets you out of the here and now. And it's also about sacrificing those needs for something that's probably never actually going to occur whatsoever, which is either reincarnation or the transcendence and their nirvana.
Well, and to be free from desire, I don't know, is necessarily appealing to me. I mean, I don't have a problem with desiring things. Like, I don't have a problem with – I don't feel that it's as much of a cage as some Buddhists might believe. And I don't know that I don't know that being completely free from it is any kind of liberation.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't put it under any kind of liberation. And I have a little bit more here that I'd like to kind of get into in regards to just kind of finish up that kind of really shows this to me. So another aspect is a complete casting away of the benefits of desire, of hedonistic vices, and an obsession with purity is basically what makes it up. So where Buddha departed most radically from Hinduism was in the doctrine of anatta, the notion that individuals do not possess eternal souls. Instead of eternal souls, individuals consist of a bundle of habits, memories, sensations, desires, and so forth, which together delude one into thinking that he or she consists of a stable, lasting self. Despite its transitory nature, this false self hangs together as a unit and even reincarnates in body after body.
So there's no soul except there's a soul.
Essentially.
That makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah. So in Buddhism, as well as in Hinduism, life is a corporal body is viewed negatively as the source of all suffering. Hence, the goal is to obtain release. In Buddhism, this means abandoning the false self, false sense of self, so that the bundle of memories and impulses disintegrates, leaving nothing to reincarnate and hence nothing to experience pain. Which... to me, sounds like someone who's really not enjoying their life right now.
Not only that, but I think the really interesting thing to read out of that is the presumption of a peasantry class to take care of you. If you're spending all your time devoting yourself to monastic pursuits, meditating, saying your little prayers, pursuing purity, you're not going to be out acquiring food, making shelter, doing things, and in history, that's more or less how that type of Buddhism played out. People were expected to care for the folks in the monastery, and it became a predatory class in the same way that the nobility in Europe did. It just had the facade of holiness to defend it.
And the absolute
ascent. Right.
Yeah. MK, you can go ahead.
I mean, you see this happening with gurus all the time. These people, it's the same as with Western religions. You have the priest class and, you know, then you have in Eastern religions, a more kind of Brahmin class. And yeah, I mean, other people just basically end up taking care of them and, providing them with, you know, I guess the basic need, you know, the basic necessities for survival. But, you know, supposedly they've superseded all of that. They've become enlightened away from any desires of anything else. And I don't know. I don't buy it. Think it's a good way to kind of change some power dynamics in your favor. So,
yeah, it certainly is one that is kind of begging for other people to control you because it's a rejection of the flesh. And if the flesh is all we have, then it's a rejection of everything under a veneer of a distant promise which will not be met. Because body hatred in the true sense is kind of an entropy demon. And whenever I think of this idea of completely distancing yourself from your own sovereignty, individual will, and self-ownership, that is prime time for other people to be able to control you, whether physically or mentally, so they can convince you to... Essentially, I know of there's a Hindu cult in India which they actually routinely eat shit. Because literal fecal matter, because it's a complete rejection of the body and a rejection of material possessions to reach some kind of enlightenment. Of course, what you end up with is a bunch of crazy ass people that hippies in America think are awesome, but anyone who probably is around them wouldn't really want to spend much time with. And that false guru premise, I mean, God, when I was in Asheville, North Carolina, it's funny when people try to think of like Eastern people or people from 2,000 years ago, where they don't think the fake guru shit that's going on right now didn't happen then. They assume that all the meditative priests and everyone else was totally not full of shit. And once you kind of start like getting that in your mind that actually you're the one who's being kind of ageist, racist, and you know, genetic fallacy, then you can realize like, yeah, people have been trying to control each other for a long time, and they've taken different routes to do it. But a big aspect of that is sacrificing, of course, asceticism and a absolute obsession with purity that you find in all of these different religions. Virgin worship is usually held pretty highly as well. Anything anyone else wants to say on that particular subject? On just the Buddhism, Eastern shit? Nothing?
I have a tattoo that says "Be here now" on my back because I got super into that.
Nice.
No, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said for living in the present moment and enjoying the time that you have here, and not denying it and not thinking of it as a bad thing and as something to escape through extreme asceticism.
So outside of the Buddhism thing, I also want to kind of hit on, well, obviously, you know, the name of our show is Libertarian Atheist Podcast. So you can kind of gather an idea of how I view life, or at least how I view death, which is I don't know what the hell happens whenever you die. My general assumption is that what happens is what happens to every other animal, is that you end up getting eaten up by worms after a while.
But it doesn't have to be worms. It
doesn't have to be worms. It could be something else. Formaldehyde.
Worms.
Worms. So, but for me, though, what's the most insulting, because I have a respect for mortality, is the callous way in which the media talks about death. So if in Florida some little white girl dies, obviously it's a tragedy, right? Nancy Grace is going to do 30 hours of programming on it, and they're going to talk about it for hours and hours and hours. And a big reason for that is because they can't figure out any way to justify this sacrifice, right? But if you have 1,000 insurgents die, it's because it's part of a bigger picture. When a soldier dies, it's a sacrifice. It's a fallen angel who's buried, but a sacrifice will live on by giving us freedom afterwards. Sacrifice is yet another virtue which I don't see merit in, at least how it's represented within the zeitgeist, because sacrifice is, according to them, about surrendering the only thing you have for an abstract idea which may not even exist. A violent collectivistic society propels the virtue of sacrifice, for it feeds it. To sacrifice is to reject what you know is the most precious thing for what is the most worthless. What is worthless is what the government calls their version of freedom. But to die for freedom is an insult to the idea of freedom. You can't experience a free life if you're dead. It's similar to the phrase, bombing for peace is like fucking for virginity. It's kind of a contradiction in terms, and the virtue of many of these religions and the state itself is a rejection of material reality, pleasure, and individual sovereignty. So what we're doing is by bringing up all these ideas of the afterlife and sacrificing ourselves for freedom, we dilute the great chance we have to do something real on this floating rock shooting around space. And it kind of shoots to, MK, what you were talking about, which is the idea of wasting your time on silly ideas while essentially not really being able to absorb what's going on in the now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned earlier about the focus that is on a single person. It reminded me of a quote. I'm trying to remember exactly. It's something like a million lives is a statistic, or a million deaths is a statistic, and one death is a tragedy.
Yeah.
And
who was that quoted to? Was that Stalin?
No?
Stalin.
Yeah. The media, like you mentioned, does a really great job of zeroing in on, you know, these kind of bullet points, these people who are sacrificing, you know, like this is why you don't see, you don't see a lot of statistics quoted when it comes to war. You just focus on the soldier who lost his legs and it's this horribly tragic thing. And look at how much he sacrificed for your freedom. He sacrificed his freedom of mobility for your freedom. And it's supposed to be this thing that kind of gives you pride in your country and that you should kind of like you owe him something after that. And there's not a lot of freedom in sacrifice.
Yeah, it's kind of antithetical to the whole idea of of freedom as a whole. And when I think about also the little amount of time we actually have here, it's partly a rejection of when it's over, it's over. And worse, when we carry out these self-hating, self-loathing, self-destructive behaviors in the quest for some kind of congratulatory party in heaven where we play harps and bow down to a God who's okay with burning billions of people in hell, we waste our precious little time. And time is completely a non-reusable resource.
Oh my God, what am I doing here?
Yeah. So rather than constantly waste time on fearing or looking forward to death, instead we should be trying to look and figure out how to make ourselves happier and what we can do to others, not out of a sense of obligation, not out of sacrifice, but out of love and actually kind of enjoying this short time that we have.
And I think that that's much more beneficial to your personal relationships with people than this idea that, you know, there is this great afterlife and you have to get people saved or they're not going to be there with you or something like that. I mean, it can be very destructive to your personal relationships when you are judging people in terms of who's lost and who's saved and who's on your side and who's not. And, you know, maybe you're not going to spend time with someone. Like if you're a born-again Christian, you're not going to spend time with someone who's lost because, oh, well, you know, they're just lost. They're, you know, they're just going to go to hell and, you know, there's nothing I can do. And you could miss out on a lot of really interesting experiences that way. And it's a very self-hating kind of thing.
Yeah. It's filled with a sense of self-hatred in there because it's the idea is that the fact that the greatest thing that has ever occurred is your God killing himself should tell you their thoughts about the enjoyments that you should have in regards to life. Obviously, they're not big fans of it. Okay, let's take a little break and just relax for a sec.
All right.
Because I only have one more thing of notes, and it's a conclusion. I want to get into some other stuff if we can. And what I kind of want to talk about is, you know, we're talking kind of in the abstract of the ideas of, oh, these are the philosophical underpinnings regarding death and trying to understand it better. But what we're kind of missing out here is any conversation of our own personal lives and what we've had to deal with. So for me, I really had only dealt with one person dying when I was a Christian, because I left Christianity by the time I was 15. And it fucking hit me hard. Though I believed in heaven and all that good stuff, and I believed in hell and all that bad stuff, it still emotionally, viscerally impacted me in a way in which I wasn't in control of any of my emotions. I mean, just tears streaming down your face, you're fucking depressed for 2 or 3 weeks. They weren't even that close to me, and it was still that hard on myself. And what I notice is when I see other people dealing with death, no matter what their beliefs, it seems to hit everyone pretty hard. And you know, and since then, I've had two people who I lost that were very close to me, being an atheist. One of them, and it happened actually between 2 weeks, and I'm going to read something a little bit here that I wrote right after that occurred. One of my friends died in a drunk driving accident, although the family's kind of dodgy about admitting it. He was a huge alcoholic, so there's a potential there. And another one of my friends a week later shot himself in the face, just annihilated. On purpose.
Okay.
Took a shotgun, put it into his mouth, and unloaded. And brain splattered everywhere, and his parents found him. And for me, the same sinking, desperate, horrific feeling hit on me. And I actually felt a different thing a little bit, was anger in both the cases, because a drink and driving accident is self-inflicted. Shooting yourself in the face is self-inflicted. And both of them had specific spiritual views on life and death. Obviously, you're not dealing with the most rational people here, the kind of person who's willing to drink and drive, the kind of person who's willing to shoot himself in the face. But it was part of me was just mad, because if he had missed that one bullet and it didn't shoot, there's a chance that he would have been able to see a sunrise the next day or see something positive in the future. But whenever you decide to just take away your life, you're removing any chance of any actual real escape because the escape from depression is not complete gone, it's happiness.
Mm-hmm. Instead, it's just oblivion and rot.
Yeah, and that's how I had to deal with that. And being an atheist, I mean, it didn't exactly help as much either. It was just both, in both cases, it was acknowledgement. What I found with the atheism thing is that it helps me live my normal life better. But dealing with death is still going to be heartache no matter what, because you realize that person's gone forever. You don't get them anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've had a couple experiences with people I was close to dying, and in different belief systems too. The first one of the hardest ones was when I was 15. A good friend of mine died in a car accident, and I was an atheist at the time, and it devastated me. And it's not, she hadn't been drinking and driving or anything like that. She was going to pick up a boyfriend, was like driving back. And, you know, maybe there might've been some recklessness cause she was young. She'd just gotten her license. But it just broke my heart because she had her whole life ahead of her. I mean, there was that potential that was there that was just gone in an instant. I mean, and it was, really, really awful. And I remember going to the wake. Her family was very religious, but she wasn't. And I remember going to the wake and regretting that afterwards. They had an open casket wake, and they like, you know, they fixed her up to where it wasn't very traumatic looking, but it didn't really look like her. And like, I really wish I had never gone.
I hate for that to be the last memory of the person. It's the worst.
Exactly. Like, I wish I hadn't gone. Because, yeah, that's the last memory I have of her instead of, you know, what she actually looked like. And I didn't handle it well. It was very, very, you know, very devastating for me. And then a couple of years ago, I had a friend pass away. When I still identified as a Christian, I was moving away from it at that point, but I still identified as that. And I felt no comfort in that religion whatsoever when she passed away. And I was even closer to her, and she died of cancer, which is also another horrific, you know, like no reason for it. Like it was, there was no like, same as with my other friend. It's just like this thing just happened to them and just took them away. And it was horrible. And I found no solace in my religion at all. It didn't bring me any peace. In fact, it disturbed me more, that, some of the people around her were religious. She was a religious person too. And I found myself deeply disturbed by, some of the ways that, they would talk about her. It's like, oh, she's in a better place now. She's not suffering as much. And, you know, she's in heaven and all of these things. And it just, it deeply disturbed me because I don't know. Like
you also got the feeling of, you know, if you think that there's a God, then you think there's someone who could have stopped this and chose not to.
And then you
have to think about the idea of worshiping that God who allowed that. So you have this mass cognitive dissonance where you're worshiping this guy for being the best person, but he kills your fucking friend in a terrible way.
Well, and then takes him to the shiny happy place where they can bow and sing praises to him all the time.
But at that point, so, it was even worse for you though, because you weren't sure if there was that happy place.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I even, you know, in my brief time as a Christian, I never felt like I was very devout at all. I never felt that I could fully suspend doubt and have true belief, you know, in God and afterlife and all of that. And it particularly disturbed me because she was so devout and was so committed. She fought horrible bone cancer until the very end of her life because she thought that maybe a miracle was going to come at the last minute. And it was really just traumatizing to see her go through that. And, you know, with her devoutness, and I'm not even going to lie, it was one of the things that really pushed me far away. It was a catalyst for me moving away again, and or maybe returning to my beliefs before, really, that I don't know ever really went away. But no, I found it really, really upsetting, and you know, almost more so than my friend passing away when I was younger, because she was, I think she was like agnostic. She'd moved away from religion, but she lived a very full life, and she was very much one of those people who would live in the moment and just really cherished life. And you know, death, it's not something that I don't know. I don't really have much to say.
Yeah. Do you think your friend with the cancer would have lived very differently towards the end if she wasn't hoping for a miracle of some sort?
It's possible.
But it's,
I'm not sure.
You're not sure.
You know, I
hope that's a situation that I never have to see somebody go through. I hope they can have enough of an understanding of what's probably going to happen that they're not going to cling to false hope.
Well,
it just sounds hard.
Everyone clings to hope though when you're fucking dying, because you don't want to go. I mean, you can be
because
religious.
Ultimately we don't know, you know. Yeah. That's the thing, like, as much as you may proclaim to know, ultimately you have to admit that you do not know.
Yeah.
You can have faith in it and you can claim that you know, but ultimately you just don't.
I think this might be the wrong
and that's
for
gonna
that.
Come out.
Well, no, I mean, for
faith.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the central thing, is that they have way more doubt than they're willing to even admit in a lot of these cases. And you know that because they're clinging. They're spending, you know, their entire life savings trying to stay awake for another 2 weeks because they don't want to miss out on everything. I mean, that's that's really, when you die, you miss out on all the parties. But to really mourn the dead is, you also have to mourn the unborn in a weird way too, because it just means a lack of existence.
As a brief aside about that, if aborted fetuses are actually people that make it to heaven, the chances of running into another human who has actually survived in this world for a while is actually quite slim. Heaven's just going to be full of the unborn.
Okay.
Which sounds fairly boring.
Yeah. And I always was really confused in the idea of heaven allowing for like babies and fetuses, because they never actually formed a consciousness whatsoever. Right. So are they just perpetually babies for the entire time that they're there? And if that's the case, anyway, I don't even want to dabble into the fucking retardation of that, but it just bothers me because it's an absolute disdain for existence and the importance of consciousness in acknowledging, you know, what's going on in their own lives. And it's a complete suspension of all real logic in order to be able to absorb a false notion that controls millions and billions of people for long periods of time and has convinced us to do insane shit like dying for freedom and dying for family and country. Anyway, Jesus Christ, we've gone dark, folks. MK, there?
Do you want more vodka?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. No, I don't need any more vodka. I do not need any more vodka. I certainly don't need that. But I did want to kind of end on something. I wrote this little thing right after those two friends died. That was I was kind of testing the limits in regards to stoicism and how that can apply in a secular world. And I would love to do a stoicism series later on where we kind of discuss a bit of these points. But kind of understanding the sphere of influence and understanding the importance of death and acknowledging the importance of our own life. So here it goes. The ultimate destiny of all living beings is death. It's the one guarantee. The denial of this existential reality means nothing to death, but it doesn't keep it from creeping forward inch by inch by car crash or cancer. We can choose to endlessly contemplate and fear it, or shut off dealing with the fact that you're going to die one day. Birth is the alpha and death is the omega, and life is the part in between. In between the beginning and the end is choice. We can choose to quiver, only living by word and not by action, or to act, which we can do with passion and commitment if we choose to. We can choose authenticity or we can choose fabrication. Hell, as I've come to understand it, is believing we have no choice. And it seems that those who believe we have little choice want to endlessly restrict it. The gatekeepers of freedom attempt to absolve their own insignificance by propelling themselves forward under the guise of leadership while stepping over the heads of others, crippling groups while damning themselves. They do not just use guns, but words, which are just as powerful. Some promise eternity, others prosperity. but they're just as confused as all of us, if not more so, because they perceive their confusion as truth and back their truth with threats. Fearing them gets us nowhere, for to fear what you cannot control is to live perpetually in a state of fear. We can only control ourselves. We can only steer ourselves. It is not the fear of death that I consider. It is the fear of a meaningless life. Meaning comes from acknowledging the former and accepting our part to play in the latter. It means accepting what you can control and not stewing in aggravation about what you cannot. You have a sphere of control, and suffering comes when we devote our lives and admire that which is outside our sphere. It's an intellectual and emotional battle that we all fight, where we seek to control uncontrollable externalities while ignoring and diminishing ourselves, diminishing what little time we have in our life. Nice. I hope that helps some other people in trying to kind of deal with death in their own lives. And I hope, you know, we can, I really hope that we can get some questions and would like to talk about this a little bit more in the future, but ooh, this is a rough.
Could I go for it, please?
Absolutely.
This is one of my favorite quotes of all time, actually, and it's by Thoreau. And it says about the same thing that you were saying. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived.
I do love that quote. So, this is weird kind of ending it here because there's no like return in the third act or anything, but it's honestly, it's fucking morbid. It's fucking death. It's
death
the
is
lack
coming for everyone and everything.
Yeah.
Tooth Fairy isn't real. Santa isn't real. And someday you and everyone you know is going to be dead.
Thank you, Calvin, for always keeping it uplifting and happy, because I'm totally going to miss you. Calvin, by the way, for our audience, make sure to send him love mail soon, because he's going to be leaving to Thailand very soon, and I'm going to miss him so much. I love you, man. And don't drink and drive, asshole. All right. So, or Sherman Drive, either one. But anyway, we'll probably be continuing this kind of later on in the series. I want to get into the ideas of Stoicism. It's important for us not to be aimlessly fighting the fucking Federal Reserve and arguing with leftist anarchists or femi-Nazis online on Tumblr every single day, feeling some form of self-righteousness by doing so. You're not actually propelling yourself forward very much, although you can have some fun in the gossiping and everything else, but keeping yourself constantly obsessing about things that you have no real control over is always going to lead to suffering. So I want to help and create more tools so that we can live better lives for the time that we have now, which is, I think, the best thing that we can do, because God knows I'm not going to be able to cut down the state with a sword anytime soon. So might as well do what I can with the freedoms that I'm allotted for right now. And on that note, you can find libertarian-atheist.com. I fucking wrote 5 articles today. There's tons of stuff on there. There's YouTube links. You can also subscribe on Stitcher, iTunes, and everything else. So please check that out. And MK is actually, she has her own little bio now on Libertarian Atheist. She's the managing editor in that I write a shitty article and then she fixes the entire thing within 10 minutes. And then I post it and it looks awesome. So thank you for that. And
no problem.
MK, obviously people can find you on the Freedom Fiends, right? And also Bitcoin Not Bombs, mklords.wordpress.com. Is that all of them?
Yep, pretty much. Just Google MK Lords and all my stuff will come up. So
awesome. Alrighty, folks. I enjoyed it. I hope you did too. And I will see you soon.
He said, baby, what's the big deal? Feel what you want to feel. Say what you wanna say. You're gonna die one day. For example, I could kiss you just because I want to. What's the difference if you turn away? I'm gonna die one day. Why do you waste your time thinking about your reputation? Trying to meet an expectation, wondering what they're gonna say. You ever known Santa Clara head start.
ask for much. A little music and a soft touch. Why don't you let it out to play? Your heart is in a birdcage, singing in your chest. You wanna shut it up or give it a rest? You're gonna die one day. Why do we waste our time thinking about an obligation? Running from a confrontation, wondering what we ought to say. Up in my arms, and if we must go down, we'll go singing to the smoke alarms, we'll dance into the ground.